This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Taking your phone calls for the next hour here. We go to Seahawks pregame show at 10, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jet. Jet, how are you?
Hey, Clayton, it's Joe Douglas. I hear you had dinner with Adam Gase here this past week, so you must have heard about the opening that we now have in our organization at the head coaching spot. So I'm calling to invite you in for an interview for the coaching spot. I'm trying to catch my net out far and wide, and I'm seeing if there's any interest that you have and if you may be a nice fit for us.
Okay.
I'd like to have you come on out. I mean, we got great ownership. You don't have to worry about a whole lot because they'll pick out the China. They'll hire your coaching staff, and these guys are just astute, not just businessmen, because they've been huffing aerosols from Pledge furniture polish for their whole lives since they're wee boys, but because they, I mean, they're just so astute. I mean, I heard these guys having a debate, Woody and Nubby Johnson, amongst themselves the other day in the boardroom there. They were talking about what a genius so the guy that invented the doorknob is, but they couldn't decide whether he was an offensive-minded genius or a defensive-minded genius. I mean, these guys are just top-notch, John.
They really are.
You wouldn't have to worry about. All you got to do is stand on the side, look at your clipboard, and that's really all we're asking for here. So,
is there anybody they haven't interviewed?
Come on out and take a look.
It seems like, I mean, it's like the crazy part about trying to see coaching changes and coaching interviews is that everybody's like doing double digits because these are 2-hour Zoom interviews. And so it's like, and it's hard to kind of pare down where these coaching hires are going to be because there's so many of them.
Yeah, there's really no commitment because, I mean, if you got to get on a plane, you know, fly several hours, you know, each way to do an interview, that's a time commitment. That's a financial commitment. So you're pretty serious about talking to somebody. But if you're just clicking on a mouse and having a Zoom interview for 45 minutes or an hour or 2 hours, it's like that could be anybody. I mean, they could contact me. They could contact you. I mean, it's really no cost to them. You're right. It's very hard to gauge the seriousness of any of the intentions here. It's an extremely odd process.
It really is. And, you know, and so what you're almost doing is that, you know, because you would think in the old way, in the normal year, you know, you're going to have 6 or 7 interviews and then you're going to pare it down to, you know, 3, maybe 4. But now it looks like everybody has 10 and then they have to wait for the second wave and the second wave may be 5. And it's like, to me, it's just it's crazy because you can't pick out who everybody's going to go for. Who do you think the Jets go for?
Boy, I don't know, John. It's really hard to say because they've cast such a wide net. I mean, geez, they're talking to college coaches. They're talking to old NFL coaches. They're talking to coordinators. I don't know, and I don't really know what Douglas is looking to pick from. All I hope is that he's got somebody that's kind of in line with his way he wants to build a team because for so long, I mean, and this even goes back in part to when you had Schottenheimer and Tannenbaum with Ryan, and you know, Tannenbaum's drafting, you know, the tight end in the first round, moving up to the first round to get the tight end as a zone buster, and Schottenheimer refused to use him, but he was a perfect weapon against the Patriots, but the kid from Colorado, but you know, so they were never on the same page. And the Jets haven't been on the same page for well over a decade now, and pretty much since Ryan and Tannenbaum stopped working together and they went away from the ground and pound. So I just hope for nothing more that he finds somebody that has a similar philosophy and they're building and growing in the same direction.
Yeah.
Now, what that's going to be, I don't really know because Douglas really doesn't have a huge track record. I'm hoping he wants to, you know, build in the trenches and then build out from there. That's supposedly the indication, but, you know, we'll see. So I hope that he, you know, gets somebody that's kind of has a similar vision. That's all I can really hope for at this point. But you're absolutely right. It's hard to gauge the seriousness of any of these requests. And, you know, I mean, who wants to come to New York?
Mm-hmm.
As far as the top candidates go, that's going to be an interesting sell. But I also wonder, I mean, if these guys are having so many of these interviews, if some of this isn't just to pick the brains of some of these guys, to get a feel, one, for where everybody's looking and thinking philosophically, but also what they to help pick apart some of the Jets roster and some of the other philosophies out there. I, you kind of wonder, because why are they doing some of these interviews?
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's just, to me, it's just a whole strange cycle. And, you know, it hasn't gone the way that I thought it's going to go. But again, it's like we're all kind of in a new year of trying to hire coaches. And, you know, so far, no head coach. I mean, I thought it was kind of funny that Houston hires Nick Caserio as a general manager. And now there's the talk that, you know, you got a quarterback in Deshaun Watson who wants to be traded.
Yeah, that talk about, I mean, we can. You know, we can sit here and poke fun at the Jets organization all day long. I mean, it's been 60 years of futility. And believe me, I can tell you about 45 of them firsthand. But, I mean, the last 5 years, let's say, I mean, is there really a worse-run sports franchise, at least certainly not in the NFL, than the Houston Texans?
No, I agree.
I mean, I think they even beat the Jets on that one.
Well, I mean, at least they won more games than the Jets. So the Jets, I
think... Well, they had an easier schedule. He also had Deshaun Watson behind center.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, I think they've got a, you know, a bit of an advantage there. But, you know, that's the one real only asset they have left, and they've completely pissed him off.
Yeah.
What do you think about the Jets trade from? I know there's been a bunch of rumors floating around and stuff. I'm very opposed to it, but what's your thoughts on it?
I think it's going to be a consideration because, again, it's like, you know, I don't know, because they're not going to get full value for Sam Darnold. But I still don't know if they're going to take a quarterback at number two, because I'm not I don't know if they're sold on Justin Fields. I don't know if they're sold on, you know, any of the other quarterbacks. So if that's going to be the case, and they have to take a position player, what are they going to do at quarterback? Question is, OK, what are they going to do? Because they want, it sounds like they want a CEO type of coach as opposed to a just a pure offensive coach.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's clear, and it's finally time that they've come to that realization. The thing that concerns me about a Deshaun Watson trade, and I like the guy.
Yeah.
You know, I'd love to have him play quarterback for the Jets, but the problem is, what are you going to have to give up to get him?
Three number ones and probably two number twos, and
yeah,
he's got a no trade clause in his contract.
Yeah, and plus you got to pay them big money already.
Yeah.
So what I'm concerned about is that, you know, I don't want to see them, you know, get derailed from a long-term building program. And they are currently set, and if Douglas drafts wisely, they really can build up that team in the next two draft cycles to have a very solid infrastructure going forward for the next 5, 6, 7 years. I'd really hate to see them get derailed by that and try to split the baby, do a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And then you, at the end of the day, you're left with a whole bunch of nothing. And mm-hmm. Deshaun Watson is playing for a ham and egger team, you know, much like he's stuck with right now. I just hope they keep I just hope for once the Jets just keep the direction and follow somebody that hopefully has a vision and just stay the course instead of keep changing gears every 2 years when you know, they have another 4-win season.
Yeah, it's just going to be tough, but we'll just have to see.
Hope.
But let's see if they start narrowing down the list, because it's crazy.
Well, what's going to be interesting is, and when do you think the because I think once the first hire or two comes off the board, I think you're going to see the dominoes fall start pretty quickly.
Yeah.
When do you think that they're first going to start signing? And I'm not talking about the Jets. I'm just talking about the league in general. When do you think the first signings are going to start happening?
Probably by the end of next week. Thursday or Friday.
That soon? Okay.
Yeah, I would hope. They got to start doing something and get the assistant coaches. Hey, Jet, got to run.
All right, take care, John. Have a good weekend. Enjoy football weekend.
All right, sounds good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Dave Grosby joining us at the bottom of the hour. Let's go to Rob in Gig Harbor. Hey, Rob.
Oh, hey, John. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
It's always great to have access to somebody that knows what they're talking about, so I appreciate you taking so many calls. A couple of months ago, you had a caller that called in and he commented about Seattle's use of the hard count and that how, in his opinion, it was hurting the team more than helping them. So it got me to think when I was watching the games, and it's turned out that it does seem like they get a lot of false start penalties and very few defensive penalties. Matter of fact, Saddles had 19 false start penalties this year, and I doubt they're getting anywhere near that in defensive penalties. Plus, Russ seems to really draw the countdown to where he's either forced to take a timeout or occasionally get a delay of game. So I'm just wondering, what's the advantage that Seattle just continues to use this hard count so many times when it doesn't seem to be providing them any advantage?
Yeah, I think it's just a pattern you get into. And, of course, one of the things I think when you're talking about Russ, I think, is doing more adjusting at the line of scrimmage, you know, picking up what he sees and then trying to make some audibles and stuff like that. And that being the case, because, again, it was still the let's Russ cook type offense. But, I think what ends up happening is that he'll see something and then try to go for it. But, you know, it's not like he uses the hard count like Aaron Rodgers, because Aaron, I think, is one of the best I've ever seen in going with the hard count and drawing people off sides. And you don't want to draw your own guys off sides. But, I think what happens is that, you're trying to milk the play as much. I mean, you can see that, you know, a lot of times he'll get down to five, six seconds, and he'll wave a player to go run a receiver to go run right behind him and move somebody here, move somebody there. But, they won 12 games.
Sure, I know, ultimately. But when you get into the everything's analytics now, whether or not you go for it on fourth and one or you punt it, I mean, seems like they've got this down to a science. And it just seems like whatever statistical advantage they think they're getting from this hard count, I'm for it. If they can use it like Aaron Rodgers uses it, where his own players aren't jumping on his cadence, then I'm all for it. But when you get 19 false starts, I got to imagine at least half or more of those are occurring during his hard count. That it's like, if you're looking for something that's going to kill your drive and,
Yeah, but a five-yard penalty is not going to kill your drive. It's the holding penalty that's going to kill your drive.
Yeah.
I mean, they're the drive killers, because now you're talking 10 yards, not just five.
Hey, John, just to switch subjects real quick, do you know if Seattle or why Seattle doesn't use a screenplay more to, counter blitzes?
Because they do. I mean, but there was a one stretch where both Carlos Hyde and Chris Carson were hurt.
That's true.
So, again, so they didn't do it back then. Because now you're doing it with young guys like DJ Dallas and Travis Homer, and it's not going to be as successful. But no, I mean, you can see, like, even what last week they had about three or four screenplays. I mean, last year they hardly did it at all. But now, with the idea that in a healthy season, Chris Carson should get 50 catches, they're using it more now that Chris is getting healthy. And honestly, I know somebody asked me about this yesterday, is the fact that you can see that coming off the they took Chris sometimes come off the field after a couple plays. I think they were just kind of saving him in the San Francisco game and a little down the stretch so that they can get more out of him during the playoffs.
Well, sure is nice to have him be near full health going into the playoffs this year. So, hey, John, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Ed in Denver. Hey, Ed.
Morning, John. Happy Saturday to you.
Happy Saturday to you.
Hope you're having a good day.
Yes.
So it comes down to this. Another day for the Seahawks next week, or 8 months of anguish.
I know.
Which ones are going to be today, John?
Well, but let's put it this way. I know this hasn't been a good year for home teams, because home teams are 127, 128, and 1. But if you notice, 12 of the 14 teams in the playoffs, with the exception of, say, Washington and Chicago, have had really good winning records at home. And, this game is in Seattle. This game, Russell Wilson's 5-0 in the playoffs at home. They were 7-1 at home this year. And, of course, you've got a situation at the moment with Jared Goff coming up here in a little bit of the cold with a broken thumb that just had surgery 12 days ago. And, of the two quarterbacks, if Jarrett does start, which of the two has a chance to maybe make a turnover or two more than the other? And I think you can say it's Jared Goff. So I know that it's still going to be tough for Russ to get the offense going, because the Rams are the number one defense in football as far as statistically. But I think the advantage still goes with Seattle.
Yeah, definitely agree with you. Did you read Bob Condotta's article today talking about the Seahawks being having won all of the rubber games when they're involved in a third game? Four times it's happened, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, so much of that's having a great coach. So much of that's having a great quarterback.
And I so agree with Chris' comments about, you know, I so hope that they don't have a bunch of false starts, don't burn timeouts, don't be faced with a lot of second and longs. Hope they get Chris Carson going early.
And then to do better on third down, both on offense and on defense.
Exactly. What to do with Rashad Penny? You got to be a little frustrated not being able to be on the sidelines and knowing what's really going on.
Well, I don't know if he had a little bit of a setback, but, I mean, they did put him on the injured list as questionable with a knee injury and brought up Alex Collins from the practice squad. So, you know, who knows? We'll find out after the game when Pete is going to be asked about that. And we'll find out maybe before the game because somebody may ask him, Jessamine may ask him what happened with Penny. So we'll get that idea and we'll find out. We'll see if he's active or not active. But, I think a precautionary measure. But when you look at the injury list, it's still pretty good. I mean, yeah, Shaquille Griffin's on there is questionable. It's just a little bit of a tight hamstring, but they expect him to play. And so they did make one move with Jonathan Bullard. I mean, he put him on a COVID-19 list. We don't know the extent of what happened there, but so far he would be the fifth guy that's made the list, but so far nobody has had a positive test, so we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, I think it's all good from the injury standpoint. I like Alex Collins. He played well last week. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering what Travis Homer's gonna, what his status is, and with regard to Goff, even if he plays today, I mean, I think that may play to our advantage because I can't believe that he can be effective 2 weeks after breaking his thumb.
I think it's going to be tough, too. And, you know, again, the one adjustment that he has to make is that, he won't be able to take as many snaps from center because that's that. How, can you imagine trying to take, 40, 45 snaps from center? Because I used to like to have 60% of the snaps taken from center. And, of course, you're doing that on a broken thumb that just had surgery. He's going to have to do everything in shotgun.
And he's kind of a snaps from center kind of guy, too.
Right.
So that's going to also play to our advantage, I think.
So, no, I think the edge still goes to Seattle, but now it's a matter you go out there. I mean, you certainly can't take the Rams for granted. They've done such a great job through the years with Sean McVay against this team. And so that's why it's going to be so fascinating. That's why this first round of the playoffs is, you know, just going to be so much fun to watch because in these six games we'll get to find out, okay, we're in the playoffs now. Who looks good and who doesn't?
Exactly, John. A brief segue to Denver here. It's interesting that Broncos management and John Elway met and he agreed to resign. He was fired. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out with regard to Von Miller. I can't imagine the new GM taking over and saying, oh, I'm the guy that's going to get rid of Von Miller.
Yeah, well, of course, I mean, that's the one thing is that Elway's still there. I mean, he hasn't given up his position on the team. He just gave up the general manager part of it.
Yeah, but I think it's just going to be a puppet kind of position at this point, don't you?
I wouldn't go that far because, again, it's like, you know, John Elway's still overseeing everything, and if that's going to be the case, it's like whoever comes in as a GM, if John doesn't like what he's doing, then expect a change.
I agree completely. I mean, Elway's a legend,
yeah.
But he's got to be kicking himself big time that he didn't pick up on Josh Allen a couple of years ago.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's like you got to make the right move on the quarterback position, and sometimes it takes years. But, you know, since Peyton Manning's left, it hasn't worked out yet. Hey, Ed, thank you for the phone call.
Right on, John.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Coming up, our weekend dose of the Groz, it's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
It is time for our Daily Dose of the Groz, or not our Daily Dose, our Weekend Dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby. And so, Dave, this is it. This is a defining day to see where this Seattle team is as far as are they a Super Bowl contender, pretender? What are they? What are the Rams? What's going to happen with Jared Goff? Your thoughts on this big game?
Let me tell you something else, John. I think this day, this weekend, is going to be repeated. I think that when Sunday clears, the dust clears, the NFL is going to decide we need to keep this three wild card games on Saturday, three wild card games on Sunday as part of the playoffs going forward, because I think it's going to be a big success. That having been said, it's going to be a fascinating game, I think. Look, these two teams obviously know each other. They play in the division against each other, so we know that Russell Wilson is unlikely to have a big game. We know the Seahawks are unlikely to score a whole lot of points. The only X factor really in the game is if Jared Goff doesn't start. The Rams actually have a quarterback. The Seahawks have very little film on. He played last week, and Sean McVay had the full week to try and put in some plays. I imagine a lot more read options, a lot more things they do. I think every player would tell you, John, that the last thing you want is uncertainty. You like to know who's going to be in there. So even if it is a backup, it's not necessarily something that handicaps the Rams, though I do think it hurts their passing game to a great extent. But I really don't see, in terms of game plan, this being particularly different than the other games. I think with the backup quarterback in there or an injured Jared Goff in there, and frankly, if I'm a Seahawks fan, I'd rather see Goff play. You run the risk of having a lot more turnovers, and that could turn the tail in this game. But these two teams were separated by 4 points during the regular season, each winning once. And I expect a defensive game and do not expect 20 points to be scored by either team.
Yeah, I think it's going to be – I agree with the low-scoring part of it, unless there's going to be turnovers. Turnovers
right.
can come back and really –
Turnovers change the equation. If the Seahawks turn them over, big picks, they can win it easy. But I do not see that happening the other way, by the way. I don't see the Seahawks turning it over a lot.
No, but I could see that happening, particularly if Goff was out there, because one the double whammy that he has, gripping the football and throwing it, it's going to be right. a little different than doing it down in California where it's warmer. It's a little bit colder here. And, of course, I mean, he's only 12 days off of thumb surgery. And then, most of his snaps will not be behind center. It's going to be shotgun snaps. And so, catching the ball, it could be a miss or two.
Yeah, and I don't expect a fast start either, John. I know people are frustrated with the Seahawks offense not starting fast. I don't see it. I see this being truly a Pete Carroll-style game where the Seahawks, they run Chris Carson into that. It doesn't matter if he first 15 carries, if he only gets 30 yards. They're softening them up to try and win it in the fourth quarter. The goal for this game, barring turnovers that turn into a kind of a different contest, from the Seahawks' perspective, I think, is to get to the fourth quarter with the lead or within a touchdown of the lead. And having had Chris Carson wear that defense down, making them vulnerable to play action, and that's a chance where you have to hit your big plays. But, DK Metcalf has struggled with Jalen Ramsey. The numbers are there, and I would expect that to be the same today. And look, here's the thing about the Rams, John. You and I are both old enough. We have seen teams that don't have much of an offense, who don't have much of a quarterback. And you can go back to the 79 Rams if you want to, who played your Steelers in that final Super Bowl that they won. That was a team that had – remember their quarterback during the regular season?
Mm-hmm.
Dieter Brock.
Dieter Brock,
and then Vince Ferragamo played quarterback for him, but they had Jack Youngblood and Jack Reynolds and a sensational defense. And the Rams have Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey, and we've seen it. We've seen it with Ray Lewis. We've seen great defenses carry mediocre quarterbacks far. So the Rams have that going for them in this one, and we'll see if their big-time players can make big-time plays. But I expect a really old-fashioned kind of throwback slugfest, and it's a game Seattle is very, very comfortable with. I don't think they'll be rattled at all. It's too bad, again, that we talked about the crowds not being there, and you stated the stat that for the season it's 127, 128, and 1. Oddly enough, the Seahawks are 7-1 at home after being just 4-4 last year, which doesn't make any sense at all. But, Goff is high risk if he plays, in my opinion, because of the turnover possibilities. So I'm not so sure how much we'll see him.
Yeah, and again, you notice that you're not hearing anything from Sean McVay, which is wise on his part, because you want to keep everybody guessing.
Absolutely right. Like I said, I mean, the worst thing for a defense is uncertainty, is not knowing who's going to be there. And again, there's not a lot of film to prepare for what Flaherty can do, and he can run a little bit. They're going to have some read action, some different running looks put in there. McVay is a master of offense, and has had a full week to do some of that. So you're going to see that's the one X factor for the Rams that is a positive, is that they are going to throw some different looks at the Seahawks, truly different looks involving different players, and that's really hard to do when you're playing a team third time around.
Yeah, it is. And, of course, and I guess I know that brought up the stat that Seattle and Pete Carroll has been very good in those third matches where they've taken on a team and getting that rubber type of game. They've been very good about that, of course, and they need to today.
They do. I mean, it's just there's no getting away from the, in my opinion, the fact that this is just going to be a game that's just going to be grinded out, and it's going to go into the fourth quarter, and it's going to be anyone's game at that point. I just don't see it going any other way. And I go back, John, to the first game, and I know you were working the sidelines, so you didn't see it. Erin Andrews, it was a Fox broadcast, did her little spiel about talking to the two coaches, and she said she talked to Sean McVay after the first half of that last game. The Seahawks won 20-11, and McVay was upset. He said, "We're not, Jared Goff has got to play better. He's got to hit his passes better. We're not doing things the way we should be doing it." He was upset. And she talked to Pete Carroll, who was serene, who said, "Well, this is great. I mean, we're in the game. We like how we're playing. We'll just get him in the second half." This is going to be a Pete Carroll-style game. By the way, the Super Bowl, the Rams lost to Bill Belichick's Patriots. A Pete Carroll-style game.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see the same sort of thing where they want to keep the score down, where you run the ball, where you're setting up the other team for big plays in the fourth quarter to win it. And I think ultimately that's going to be successful.
Yeah, and that's the thing, I think, is everybody, I've heard it all week. It's like they seem to be more worried about the stats than the game and the win. It's like, oh, well, look at the numbers being down and all these different things. And it's like, okay, are they still winning? Because they've taken on some good defenses. Defenses we didn't think were going to be good, but they were good.
Exactly right. And people forget that it's only about winning. And, the mantra I've always said over the years, John, is don't get tired of winning. And the Seahawks were 12-4 this year. I mean, this was a terrific year. You don't beat teams in the NFL 50-0. You don't do it. You never do it. And it's not always the fact that your offense is playing poorly. Sometimes it's the defense that's playing well. So, this is going to be one of those games, I think, for Seahawks fans that's going to be frustrating to them. They're going to be wondering what's going on, why they're continuing to call Carson up the middle. Mm-hmm. And it's all about setting them up for big plays in the second half. And that's when I expect we'll see it. And I'm sure they'll have a surprise or two for each other at the beginning. But this game is going to settle into just a real battle. And, by the way, the Rams returned some other guys, Whitworth, Brockers, so they're going to be healthier as well. I think this is going to be the best game of the day.
Yeah, I think this Indy game that's going to be coming up here in 20 minutes is also going to be
fascinating,
really good too, because that's the one thing is when you have a young quarterback, sometimes it takes a couple years for that young quarterback to learn how to win a playoff game, and that could be the case with both Josh Allen, who's had one playoff game, and so far Lamar Jackson in Baltimore with two.
Absolutely right. The Colts in that Bills game. Colts can run the ball, and Bills have had trouble stopping the run. So if they run the ball a la Titans last year, anything could happen. And Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, right, I mean, this is their prove-it game. I mean, I like them. I think that the Titans don't have the same defense that they had last year, and I expect that they're going to be effective today. And I think, by the way, in the other game today, the Tampa game, I like Tampa's probably the team that I like to get to the Super Bowl. But I think this might be their toughest test because they have had difficulties with good defensive lines. And we saw that Washington defensive line, John, up close and personal. That's a good defensive line. So this is going to be a tough game for them. But then we'll see what happens afterwards. But I think this is the bottom line about today and tomorrow is going to be this is going to be a wild success for the NFL. And we'll see it moving on.
But I agree with you. I think that 14 playoff games, having a start with 6 playoff games, three a day for 2 days, I think is the right way to do it. And, I did not like the idea of going to 16. 16's too much. It cheapens it.
Yeah, this works perfectly. You get a bye for the top record, and I don't think there's any problem with this at all. So I think, again, it's going to be very, very exciting to have 6 games. It fits. It's going to fit, and it's going to fit moving forward. So I would tell NFL fans to get used to today. It's going to be happening in the future.
Yeah, really will. And, of course, it's going to be interesting. How do you look at that Browns-Steelers game? knowing the Browns have so many problems. Now, they took three guys off the COVID list today, including one of their starting safeties, Ronnie Harrison. But two of their top three cornerbacks are out, Denzel Ward and Kevin Johnson. Their best offensive lineman, Joel Bitonio, three-time Pro Bowler, he's out. And six coaches, including the head coach and offensive line coach Bill Callahan.
Right. I mean, it's just if you're the Browns, you want to say in that team huddle before the game starts, no one thinks we can win today. You're going to be right. No one thinks they can win today. So I would expect that they've still got some top skill position players left there. I'm not so confident about Pittsburgh going into this postseason. I think the Browns can rise above, but it's certainly difficult news for them to lose all those guys coming into their first ever playoff game. So they could rise above, but the Steelers have been here before and have a great veteran, a quarterback. It's going to be tough, but they're the team that let them in. That they got that win over the Steelers to get them in, so they've got that going for them as well.
Yeah, but also when you throw into it, it's like they also lost two other players to injured reserve, Olivier Vernon, one of their best pass-rushing defensive ends, and also Will Harris, the former UW offensive lineman, who's supposed to be the guy that was going to replace Joel Bitonio.
Yeah, that's a lot of guys missing. I hear you, John, but I still am of the opinion that Cleveland's going to give them a game, though I expect Pittsburgh to win.
Yeah.
I think the biggest blowout of the weekend is going to be New Orleans over Chicago. I just don't like Chicago. And like I said, I think Baltimore really gets going against Tennessee. I think that Tennessee, Henry's great. Their approach is great. And they had their number during the regular season game this year. But I think Lamar Jackson's time has come to win a playoff game, and I think he does.
Okay. Well, it's going to be fun to watch. And, of course, that's our weekend dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby. David, enjoy these next 2 days of football.
John, it sounds great. I look forward to talking to you next Saturday.
Okay, sounds good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
Our thanks to Matt Nelson for producing the show. Thanks to Matt Nelson for running the show. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Give us a call here. We go to the pregame show at the top of the hour. And, of course, big day for Seattle football as they take on the Rams in, one of the bigger games that you can have right now. Division game, one that they definitely need to try to win to try to see where they're going to go. Rams come in with the uncertainty at the quarterback position. They are, other than that, reasonably healthy. Michael Brockers was able to make it. I mean, he had to fly separately coming off the COVID list and had to stay at a different hotel. But he's here. They're going to have Andrew Whitworth back at left tackle. I think one of the big questions and understated questions is what happens at running back. Cam Akers, gut it out last week and played, but that high ankle sprain, but he only had 21 carries and 34 yards. How effective is he? And if they can't generate the running game, and remember, they don't have Darrell Henderson. Henderson went on the injured list and injured reserve list in the Seahawks game when he was tackled by Jamal Adams on that, and he got a high ankle sprain. So you take a look and you say, okay, can they run the football? Can they pass the football if Jared Goff is going to go? Where are they with John Wolford? A few more questions right now for the Rams than the Seahawks. And, of course, we do have that update that Jonathan Bullard, defensive end for the Seahawks, had to go on the COVID list, so he's not going to be available. We don't know about Rashad Penny. Penny, of course, is questionable. They added him yesterday with the knee injury. And, of course, remember, he's still coming off that knee surgery, the ACL surgery. So don't know if he's going to be available. But Chris Carson, Carlos Hyde, they're all available and should be able to go. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, as we get ready for this one. And, of course, we'll get the inactives as we get closer to the game. Now, who do we have? Mark. Let's go to Mark in Walla Walla. Hey, Mark.
Hey, how you doing, John? I just wanted to pick your brain on the status of Jared Goff and if Seattle's defense will be able to fare against him if he starts, and if not, with this new quarterback that they have, how do you think Seattle's defense will be able to fare against that quarterback as well?
Well, I think that they can fare very well against both. I mean, Wolford is very inexperienced. He only has one start in the National Football League. He had never thrown a pass in the National Football League until last week against Arizona. And so, you know, it's going to be, I think, a tough one if it's going to be him, not for the Seahawks. But again, he's a better runner than Goff, but he's not as good of a quarterback as Goff. We just don't know who he is and how he is. And so there is that uncertainty. But remember, a lot of this has to go with what happens with Cam Akers, because Akers is, you know, coming off a high ankle sprain, and he was only able to do limited amount of stuff as far as, you know, just 21 carries and 34 yards. Goff has to make the adjustment that, you know, he's going to not be able to, you know, take the snaps from center as much as he normally likes to do, because again, he's 12 days off thumb surgery. And so he's going to have to take more shotgun snaps, and that could be problematic.
Hopefully so. Hopefully we get the win at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's what they need to do. And of course, doesn't matter how pretty it is, doesn't matter what type of game it is, it's just a matter of coming out and getting the victory. Hey, Mark,
absolutely.
Thank you for the phone
call.
Thank
you for your time.
Okay, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, as we get ready to hand it over to the pregame show and get you know, a lot of information out there as far as this game. Again, you know, it's interesting to see that both teams are, you know, except for the situation with Goff, very healthy going into this one. That's encouraging. And really, I mean, some good news around the National Football League. Looks like Mike Evans is going to be able to play in Tampa Bay. He was fighting that hyperextended knee. You know, it looks like in Buffalo, Cole Beasley is going to be active. He was questionable. Stephon Diggs is going to be questionable, but he's going to be able to play. So those things are encouraging. Cleveland was able to get a starting safety back off the COVID list in Ronnie Harrison, but, you know, they don't have two of their three best cornerbacks. Their best coverage cornerback in Denzel Ward, he's still on the list. And then, you know, they don't have Kevin Johnson, their third cornerback, so he's going to miss the game. Joel Bitonio is going to miss the game. Will Harris, former Husky, is going to miss the game. But, of course, one thing is, we're not going to miss any of these games. It's a great weekend. It's super wild card weekend. You know, three games today, three games tomorrow, six total, and a lot of interest in this one. And, of course, it's going to start out with the Indy-Buffalo game coming up in the next few minutes. And, of course, we've got the pregame show coming up here on 710 ESPN Seattle and the Seahawks Broadcasting Network. I'll be checking back in at 11:10. And, of course, we'll get you the inactives and all those different things. And, of course, enjoy today. Big day for football in Seattle, Los Angeles, you name it. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.